Ua ho'omalolo ia mai ne, kea aha ho'okolokolo ki'eke hano hano. This Honorable Supreme Court is now reconvened.
Please call the case.
Case number SCWC 15478, Protect and Preserve Kahoma Ahupua'a Association et al. Versus Maui Planning Commission et al. Arguing for petitioner Stanford Carr, Jennifer A. Lim. Arguing for petitioner Maui Planning Commission, Thomas W. Colby, Deputy Corporation Counsel. Arguing for the respondent, Lance D. Collins. Argument on the merits.
All right. Good afternoon. Aloha, everyone. The proceeding today is being broadcast live on the Judiciary's YouTube channel. And during our proceeding, should a justice have a question, they'll raise their hands virtually, and I will call upon them at the earliest opportunity. I'd like to ask our attorneys to introduce themselves and the order in which they'll be arguing.
Good afternoon, Chief Justice and Associate Justices. I'm Jennifer Lim, and I'll be arguing first.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Tom Colby on behalf of the County of Maui. I'll be arguing second.
Very well. Thank you.
Aloha, good afternoon. Lance D. Collins, and I will be arguing for the respondent as the last.
Very well, thank you. And just to confirm, Ms. Lim, you'll have a 15 minutes for your initial argument with 10 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Colby, you'll have 5 minutes, and Mr. Collins, you'll have 30 minutes with the 5 minute warning before the end of your argument, and you will each see a light and hear a tone at the end of your allotted time. Ms. Lim, please proceed.
Thank you. Thank you for giving us this opportunity today, and may it please the court. This case is about the Kahoma Village Affordable Housing Project. The project is located on the Mauka side of Front Street, about a half a mile away from the beach. Next door is a 2.8-acre county-owned Kahoma flood control project, and immediately next to that is a 120,000-square-foot shopping mall. Prior to construction of this project, the land was used as a dumping ground and as a homeless encampment. There are 203 homes at the Kahoma project. It qualifies as an affordable housing project under HRS 201H38 because Kahoma was developed to provide more than 50% of the homes to income qualified buyers. The project also includes improvements to both Kinui Street and Front Street, such as curbs, gutters, new sidewalks, and landscaping. Provided 30 public parking stalls along Kinui Street and public park space within the project that'll be maintained by the Kahoma Association. Protect and Preserve Kahoma Ahupua'a Association, as best we can tell, is comprised largely of members who live Makai of Front Street, although one member appears to have two homes located approximately a mile Mauka. This Kahoma land is designated in the State Land Use Urban District and has long been zoned by the County of Maui in the Apartment District. The Maui Island Plan, enacted in December 2012, and therefore the most recent of the three plans that compose the Maui General Plan, identifies this property as a Lahaina infill. It's within the designated urban growth boundary and was identified for the development of 214 housing units and approximately 2 acres of park space. After the preparation and processing of an HRS 343 environmental assessment and multiple hearings before the Maui County Council related to the 201H approvals, ultimately resulting in Resolution 1414, the project went back to the Maui Planning Commission for an SMA permit. This public process took approximately 2.5 years, which certainly falls far short of the 45-day approval process contemplated under 201H38. Today, I'd like to address three issues with the court. First, I want to respond to the court's question asking if 201H38 allows for exemptions from 205A-26-2C. And further, I hope to demonstrate that the SMA permit, which includes the Planning Department's reports and recommendations as its findings, conclusions, and order, included the appropriate determinations with respect to the Maui General Plan. Second, I'd like to show that the ICA incorrectly interpreted and applied the law on standing, and the Maui Planning Commission got it right when it determined that the association had failed to demonstrate injury in fact. And third, I will show that the association does not have a property interest in this SMA permit. And moreover, even if it did, the multi-year process that was used before this project got approved by its SMA permit and the multiple rounds of approval certainly provided more than adequate process. So on point one, the court asked a very specific question. Does 201H38 allow for exemptions from 205A262C? The answer is yes, and that's based on statute and legislative intent for both 205A and what was originally 359G and is now 201H. Hawaii's Coastal Zone Management Act of 1977, Act 188, didn't have any requirement that SMA permits be issued if there was compliance with zoning or general plans. That requirement simply didn't exist. However, it did get added over time, and together with those requirements, language was also added to Chapter 205A, contemplating that developers seeking SMA permits would also be seeking land use changes, zoning changes, general plan changes, even state land use district boundary amendments. That concurrent processing is still within Chapter 205A today.
Ms. Lim, could I ask you, and what's your argument with regard to whether the CDMA is a law relating to development within the meaning of 201H?
The entire CZMA law, Chief Justice?
The part that you're arguing for the exemption from, or you're argued that is not required to be complied with, which I assume is a consistency provision, correct?
Correct. So thank you very much for that question. As you probably know, 205A is comprised of five parts. The first part sets forth the objectives and policies. It's kind of the broad overview of the CZMA. Part two of Chapter 205A is the portion of the chapter that deals with development permits. If you want to do development in the SMA, it's defined within Chapter 205A, Section 22, what development means, and you can't do development in the SMA unless you get a development permit. That's in part two. And part two is where the 205A26 language is. Then there are other parts of 205A that aren't at issue here. So our position, to give you sort of a long roundabout answer, Chief Justice, but our position is not that 201H38 permits exemptions from all parts of Chapter 205A. I mean, it may, but that's certainly not the position that SCD has ever taken, and that's not the position that we took for this project, or necessarily a position needed in order for this court to agree that 201H38 does allow for exemptions under that particular language in Part 2, the SMA permit section of Chapter 205A. And the reason for that, well, there's several reasons. First, the fact that as I said, the 201H38 language covers all laws dealing with planning, zoning, general plans, development, construction of housing. But that's a very general answer. More specifically, 201H38 added language in 1984 to specifically incorporate planning as among the exemptable laws. The legislative history shows that general plans and development plans were exempted or were precisely exempted under 201H in 1984. And the reason for that, as according to the Conference Committee report, Report 4384, was so that affordable housing projects would not have to undergo a duplicative and lengthy procedure in order to obtain a planning exemption, because that wasn't consistent with the intent of the statute. So we know 201H38 clearly allows for the exemption. And then we have to look at what is this precise exemption? It's an exemption from either general plans or zoning. Well, the county councils are the bodies that enact general plans and zoning ordinances. So for the county councils to be able to either enact those laws or provide exemptions from those laws pursuant to 201H, it seems pretty self-evident to us that the exemptions are allowed by law.
Is there a possible conflict with federal law in this instance, since the CZMA is, you know, I think sort of derived from a body of federal law, and there's requirements that amendments to the program must be submitted for approval. there a sense that in this case, perhaps we should read related to narrowly to avoid that conflict? And then I see Justice McKenna has a question. So start with mine and then we'll turn to hers.
Sure. Thank you for that question. No, sir, there is no conflict whatsoever. On the first part of my answer, remember that I said that the law that we're talking about, the CZMA law that got approved by the federal government in, I think it was September 1978, contained the version of 205A that didn't have this language calling for consistency with general plans or zoning. So that was never submitted and it was never approved by NOAA. Secondly, it is because the Chapter 205A was just one of a package of laws that was within the Coastal Zone Management Act, or excuse me, the Coastal Zone Management Program that got approved by the federal government. There are regularly changes to the laws, right? To Chapter 6E, to Chapter 343, to Chapter 205. Those are regularly happening every year through the legislative process. And that doesn't require reapproval of the Coastal Zone Management Program. Those are submitted from the Office of Planning, which is the lead agency now, to NOAA, and they're viewed as routine program implementation. And I can give you a very specific example if you would like. I know one of the justices had a question though.
No, I mean, if it'll help make your point, and then we'll hear from Justice McKenna.
Thank you. So just very quickly, I can tell you of at least two laws that have been enacted. One, exempting DOT harbors from having to get any kind of permit, any kind of SMA permits whatsoever. Another, exempting DOBAR, DLNR DOBAR, from having to get SMA permits. Those were both processed as routine program implementation. So to say that, you know, some modification, and again, for this project, it wasn't an SMA exemption. It was merely a determination that the resolution was sufficient to find consistency. That doesn't run afoul of any kind of federal law.
Very well. Justice McKinnon.
So I understand it's your position that the 201H38, which exempts laws relating to development, would allow an exemption of 205A-26's consistency requirement. That's your position, correct?
Yes.
Okay, but 201H38 is a development of public housing, and it seems to be referring to development of public housing. But it appears that 205A22 has a much broader definition of development that could. It seems like the definition of development under 205A22 might be different. When you look at the definitions, development means uses, activities, or operations or land on land in or underwater within a SMA, which includes even the placement of any solid material or any gaseous liquid solid or thermal waste. And it also includes change in the density and intensity of use of land. I guess that could be development in the way we know it, but a change in the intensity of use of water, grading, removing, dredging, mining, or extraction of any materials, these are all considered development under 205A22. So doesn't it seem like development as used in 201H38 differs from development as used in 205A26?
Unquestionably, Justice McKenna. Absolutely. And again, we're not taking the position that through 201H38, we could be exempt from having to get a development permit in the special management area, i.e. an SMA permit. Not at all. That's never been the position. All we're saying is that that one provision that is a requirement for an SMA permit, that one provision that says an SMA permit shall be consistent with general plan or zoning. Well, that provision was clearly exempted by the 201H resolution. And the 201H resolution, as we discussed a few minutes ago, clearly exempts projects, qualified projects, if the county council so approves, qualified projects from zoning and general plans.
So you're saying it's the resolution that exempted it, not the statute itself, correct?
Oh, correct. Okay. My apologies if I hadn't made that clear.
Thank you.
Okay.
The resolution talks about community plan amendments, but how is that specific enough to exempt from the requirement of consistency?
Terrific question. We believe it is. And the reason being, an exemption from a community plan amendment in this context, again, this had gone through several years of processing, the intent, the plan to seek the exemption from getting community plan amendment was understood from the start, including from the very initial environmental assessment, early consultation. So it was always understood that the exemption from having to get a community plan amendment would be sought. And we think that getting an exemption from a community plan amendment has to be viewed as a functional equivalent of a community plan amendment, because what else could it be? What else would that exemption be? So we do believe, sir, that the resolution's exemption from a CPA amendment is sufficient for there to be a consistency finding.
We have Justice Edens has a question. Justice Edens.
You know, Ms. Lim, are there any other statutes to your knowledge that have comparable language to 201H38's exemptions?
I do not know, Justice Edens. I cannot think of one right now, but I could answer that question a little bit in the reverse.
Well, let me ask you this. I have looked, and HRS section 171.134, which relates to industrial park developments, has virtually identical language as 201H38. And is it your position that if the Maui County had a resolution similar to the one here, that essentially an industrial park development could occur within the special management area?
Well, that's a very complicated question. Let me take it piece by piece, if I may. 201H38 is for the provision of affordable housing. So that's a threshold question. Is the project going to be available to income qualified buyers? And if so, then the county council has to approve whatever the various land use exemptions that are being requested. And the council is free to not allow those exemptions. And in fact, here, certain exemptions have been requested and modified. And ultimately, what was originally requested is not what was finally approved by the council. So, I mean, could a county council authorize an industrial project in lands that are not zoned for industrial uses? Under 201H, wouldn't seem to fit with the intent of 201H38, which is supposed to be to provide affordable housing. I don't know if I'm answering your question, Justice, though.
Well, there are several statutes, including the industrial park development statute. There's agricultural park developments. And I guess what I'm just trying to understand is this. As you mentioned, that the resolution by the county council is itself sufficient to comply with the consistency provision of 205A26-2C. And as I look at those other laws on the books that have that exact same exemption language, it seems to me that based on your position, those types of projects could just simply be permitted if we have a resolution from the county council.
Well, again, this resolution did not exempt the Kahoma Affordable Housing Project from having to get an SMA permit. This resolution did not exempt the Kahoma project from having to comply with all of the objectives and policies of the CZMA. All of this resolution said, in a sense, is, hey, typically you would have to go through a county council legislative process to get a community plan amendment, because that's who grants community plan amendments. And as I said before, community plan is only one of the three components of the Maui General Plan, okay? all this resolution said is you don't need to go come back to the county council yet again to get a community plan amendment. We're going to exempt you from getting a community plan amendment so that you can have consistency under 205A. So I don't know that this is analogous to really the other statute you're referencing.
Just one question following up on the CJ's question. The relating to development provision, I take it you consider that's a pretty broad, you take a broad interpretation of that, and can you explain that? And I'm done, thank you.
Relating to development under 201H38? We read it broadly because the legislature has explained it in a broad way. I mean, when the law got first passed in 1970, it was to provide sweeping exemptions from development laws, zoning laws, construction laws, subdivision laws. I mean, it was quite sweeping, but it's important to keep in mind that that doesn't mean that there's a unilateral right of any developer to come and do whatever they want, however they want to do it. It has to go through a county council process. And there are 201H projects that get approved, and there's 201H projects that don't get approved or that get modified. So I do think it's a fairly broad term as understood since in the legislation since 1970, but it's not unfettered. I mean, there are checks on it. And it again, it has to be related to the development of housing.
We have a question from Justice Wilson.
Thank you, CJ. Ms. Lim, I wanted to try to understand your analysis with respect to the effect of the resolution 1414. And I believe that your proposition is that the resolution constituted an action under 201H38 that is an action that also amended the county general plan. Is that right?
Not exactly, Justice Wilson, but close. My position is that the resolution is, in effect, the functional equivalent of an amendment to the community plan. And okay. Again, it bears repeating, but the Maui general plan is comprised of three parts. I've already explained that under the most recent component of that three-part general plan, which is the Maui Island plan, this project is fully consistent, but not to get off track.
Okay. So in any case, the authorization of the planning commission or the county council or whoever the administering authority is under the Coastal Zone Management Act, that administrative group, in this case, Maui County Council, has, in your view, delegated the power to amend the general plan to the resolution process, if you will. And if that's the case, I think that in this case, PPKA is suggesting that that decision was not a decision that was within its discretion because of the nature of the development that's proposed. So I wanted to ask you if you could address that. I'm sure you're not taking the position that any kind of housing that is affordable would be eligible for an exemption pursuant to resolution. There has to be some consistency, I would think, with the general plan or some consistency with the coastal zone management guidelines. So how did this comply?
Thank you for the question. So to take a step back, I need to remind the court that there were two bodies that weighed in here. There was the county council that approved the resolution. It's only the county council that has the authority under 201H38 to approve resolutions for affordable housing projects pursuant to that statute. The Maui Planning Commission hasn't got any power there whatsoever. 201H resolutions don't go to the Maui Planning Commission. And as I said earlier, our position would be that the county councils would not have the authority to wholly exempt a project from having to go to the Maui Planning Commission to get an SMA permit. So what happened here, as I said, after multiple years of processing, when the project finally was brought to the Maui County Council for the approval of the resolution, the council approved various exemptions. The project, as I said, is already consistent with state land use and with zoning, but the council approved various exemptions. And only after that was done was the developer able to return back to the Maui Planning Commission and seek an SMA permit. The SMA permit proceedings were not abbreviated or in any way different than any other SMA permit proceedings would be. There was no special 201H magic there. The possible exception that when the planning department did its consistency review of the three components of the Maui General Plan, when it looked at the, and again, it's not wildly inconsistent, but the 1996 West Maui Community Plan, and it looked at this project, which isn't entirely consistent with the 1996 West Maui Community Plan, the planning department, as adopted by the Planning Commission, was able to say, okay, because of the exemption that the council had granted, this can be deemed consistent.
Exactly. So I was just trying to think through what the duty of this court is with respect to the decision that was made with respect, for example, to the SMA, because as a designated authority to make decisions for coastal zone management permits, the Planning Commission just, it sounds like, relied upon the resolution 1414 to say that the project was consistent. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
And so I was just wondering whether we should look more closely at that question and actually look at the nature of the project rather than just accepting as a accepting the resolution in terms of finding that there was consistency.
And by looking at the nature of the project, do you mean reviewing the planning department's report and recommendation that contained that analysis, or reviewing the environmental assessment that had been processed and contains a consistency analysis for all relevant state and county planning and zoning?
I suppose that could be part of the analysis, but I think that PPKA is arguing that the nature of the development is inconsistent with this idea of granting the exemption.
That's very difficult for me to understand, because the nature of this project is a qualified affordable housing project under 201H38. I mean, I think that ends the inquiry. It was determined by the County Housing Authority, Department of Housing and Human Concerns, to be qualified as such. This exemption process was laid out in the environmental assessment. I'll repeat myself, and I don't want to waste your time, but I think that our position is there's absolutely no doubt that the council not only had full authority, statutory authority to do this, that the exemption that was sought actually is on a matter that is wholly within the control of the county council. Zoning and general plans they're enacted by county council by ordinance, and the SMA permit came at the tail end. There was no prejudging on whether or not the SMA permit would get issued.
Very well. And we have a question from Justice McKenna, and then we'll probably switch to Mr. Colby at that point. We've gone a bit over, but that's fine. Let's have Justice McKenna's question, and then we'll move on with our argument. Justice McKenna.
Turning to the issue of standing, I was just wondering, is it your position that if this court were to agree with your position with respect to the effect of 201H38, then the issue of standing and whether or not PPKAA should have been allowed to intervene is also no longer relevant? Or are you now conceding that, if this court were to still find that intervention should have been allowed, then this matter would still need to be remanded?
Well, I'm not comfortable with the word conceding, but the fact of the matter is, if this court were to make the decision that the SMA permit was void, which we don't believe it was, but if this court were to make the decision that it should be void because the association should have been granted standing, then a remand would be applicable. I don't think 201H38 figures into that equation.
Okay, any Ms. Lim, any thoughts briefly on standing or due process? But again, we are running pretty far over. But if you have anything you want to put out right now before we hit to Mr. Colby, or do you want to save that for rebuttal?
If I may, I'll save it for rebuttal, but thank you for the offer.
All right, very well. Mr. Colby, let's hear from you. Thank you, Ms. Lim.
Thank you, and may it please the court. The ICA was wrong in determining that the commission must make findings of community plan consistency before it can approve the Kahoma SMA use permit. The consistency requirement in 205A262C is not an environmental concern. It's a planning and a zoning issue. And the consistency requirements are exactly the same as the Maui County Code Chapter 280B requirements. It relates to general and community plans, and those are important. They're expressions of the legislature's intent regarding what uses are allowed at a particular location. The ICA gave it a very narrow reading of County Council Resolution 14-14, which ignored that intent that the project be able to proceed without getting the community plan amendment first. But that's why they passed it. That was the intent. It gives the green light by exemption rather than through a community plan amendment. And as Ms. Lim pointed out, it's the same legislative body that has the authority to do either of those actions, either the exemption or the amendment. So it's the county's position that the court should find that the county council's resolution 14 serves as the functional equivalent of a community plan amendment because it resolves the inconsistency so that the permit may be approved.
Justice McKenna has a question. Justice McKenna.
Thank you. Mr. Colby, what is the your position as to what constitutes a law relating to environmental quality?
Related to environmental quality?
Right.
The county would concede that 205A portions of it are related to environmental quality, but respectfully, I'm not certain it makes any difference when we're doing an analysis of whether or not 201H38, for instance, would apply.
Well, actually, my question is more in line of the standing issue.
I don't believe that 205A262C relates at all to environmental quality.
Certainly, so is it your position that laws related to development and or zoning or planning are by definition not laws relating to environmental quality?
I wouldn't say that's my policy or my position. I think something can be both. 205A has so many different provisions and separate parts and can be both an environmental quality statute as well as one related to planning or related to zoning. At issue here is just really a function of whether or not the legislative intent to have a certain use be allowed at a certain location isn't really an environmental quality one. So I would just say that that an environmental quality statute could also be one that falls within 201H38. I don't know if that answered your question.
Thank you.
Please proceed, Mr. Kirby. Anything further for the court?
Just really briefly, I think it's important that Ms. Lim has already noted that it took 2.5 years, but it's important to look at the affordable housing project as a sequential process. You start with an EA, a draft EA, then there's an opportunity for public and community commentary, then a final EA. The issue of, in this case, there was a finding of no significant impacts. And so that process all took place. Then there was the resolution, and the resolution was completed exempting it through 280B before the Planning Commission even took the matter up for consideration. So I think that the sequential nature of it kind of puts all the parties on notice of where this thing is going. And I think it's very obvious that it was the intent of the Planning Commission, of the County Council to have this project approved Of course, all the other provisions of 205A apply. The county is not trying to skirt its obligations vis-a-vis the 205A coastal zone management. But in this case, what we're really just talking about is whether or not they can avoid the costs and time it takes to do a community plan amendment and just exempt it. And that was the intent. That's why they passed that exemption of the 280B county code provision.
But isn't it possible to say no need for an amendment, but still require that there be a consistency determination? Or is that not something that you think is possible or that wasn't contemplated here?
I think the legislature can always decide that they want to go ahead and go through a full process, and they can make consistency a requirement. They could certainly say,
right? The council, your view is the council exempted it from the consistency determination?
Yes, that's our position. And I wonder whether there would be a different outcome if the staffing report stated that the project is not consistent with the community plan, but doesn't need to be because the county council has exempted the project from compliance with 280B. Or even if the resolution included an exemption from 205A26 in addition. So I think that rather than elevate form over substance, I really believe that the intent was that the consistency issue be resolved through the resolution and that the other portions, the environmental portions of 205A26, of course, still seem to need to be met.
Justice McKenna.
I'm sorry. You indicated if the staffing report had said that it was inconsistent, it could be one thing. So was there a staffing report that said that this was consistent?
Not exactly.
Is that in the record?
Well the staffing report, which was adopted by the county council, is in the record.
Okay.
They didn't make a consistency finding. What they did was they noted what the project district was in the 1996 community plan. And then they had a simple one paragraph explanation that the county council had taken action to exempt the matter from 280B. And of course the language in exhibit 2 of 280B states that an exemption from 280B, quote, shall be granted to permit the project to proceed without obtaining a community plan amendment. So I think that was what the Planning Commission was relying on.
All right. I do have a follow-up question. I believe you indicated 205A26, that provision is not a law relating to environmental quality, but has this court previously held that the entire Chapter 205, the Land Use Commission Act, is a law relating to environmental quality? So if that chapter is a law relating to environmental quality, why is not the entirety of Chapter 205A also a law relating to environmental quality?
I think it can be characterized that way. What's difficult about this is that in terms of what 201H38 says, is they say all laws, what they say is all statutes, ordinances, charter provisions, and rules of any government related to planning, zoning, et cetera. I think that 205A can correctly be characterized as a law involving environmental quality. I was simply saying that the very specific portion, 205A26-2C, is not environmentally related. The real reason for that provision is that when the Planning Commission is looking through their checklist, there's not a consistency with the plans. That's a problem. And so the other portions, I think, certainly are related to environmental quality. Certainly 26-2A is.
Very well. Anything further, Mr. Colby, before we hear from Mr. Collins?
No, thank you.
Very well. Thank you. Now, Mr. Collins, your argument.
Aloha, ai olo olo ai, ka'aha ho kolo kolo, kie kie. Aloha, and may it please the court, Mr. Chief Justice and Associate Justices. The Coastal Zone Management Act and the State Coastal Zone Management Program is a comprehensive regulatory scheme to protect the environment and the resources of our shoreline areas. It implements a federal program. In exchange for undertaking the system of regulation, the state has received and does receive federal monies, as well as allowing federal lands and acts to be subject to state regulation. As noted in Mahu'iki, permits required under Hawaii's CZMA supersede all others. The 201H38 statute that's called, the so-called fast track statute, permits county councils to exempt certain housing projects from certain laws and rules related to planning, zoning, subdivision, and construction of dwelling units. When adopted in 1976 and since, it was intended to create an alternate set of building standards for eligible developments. HRS 201H38 presently states that final plans and specifications of a project approved by a county council, quote, shall constitute the zoning, building, construction, and subdivision standards for that project, end quote. The executive branch has long construed the statute so that these projects must still comply with the requirements of the CZMA. The long legislative history of the statute also demonstrates that the exemption was intended to be narrow. Even when the legislature removed the county's involvement in this process for 5 years in the late 80s, they specifically mentioned that the state still had to comply with CZMA regulations. Importantly, the definition of eligible developer in HRS 20H-32 says that the plan must adequately meet, quote, the requirements of all applicable environmental statutes and rules, end quote. This may or may not be the reason the council did not exempt this project from HRS 205A. The project was not exempt from HRS 205A, and the council did not have the authority to do so if it chose to. Moreover, Protect and Preserve Kahoma Ahupua'a Association and the individual member respondents, plaintiffs, appellants unquestionably had standing to intervene and participate in the approval process before the Maui Planning Commission. Failing to permit them to participate constituted a violation of their right to due process in a clean and healthful environment. I wanted to call to the court's attention a disagreement that we have with the characterizations of the legislative history that were made earlier. First, the rules related to exemptions from various statutes that was enacted in 1970, that was Act 105, related specifically to public housing projects. It wasn't until 1976 under Act 225 that the original fast track statute, which has been amended several times and is the object of this case, came into effect. And so this, the effect of that public housing project rule law in 1970 bears some relation to the 1976 Act, but is not, it's not a successor statute of the law that we're addressing is not a successor statute of the 1970 statute.
Collins, what's your response? I think it was primarily Mr. Colby's argument that, excuse me, there isn't really a conflict with federal law because the exemption is one that relates solely to would relate in the context of the CZMA, of the CZM Coastal Zone Management Act, is the determination of compliance with or consistency with the plan, and that's not sort of a core environmental protection aspect of the law. What's your response to that? In other words, can the legislature exempt? And in fact, was there an exemption here? I guess that's a two-part question. Let's start with the first one.
So the first part is that the legislature does have the power to formulate how the coastal zone management program exists at the legislative level. The legislature hasn't done that in this instance. The general and community plans are components of the state has adopted the networking pathway under Technique B. Of the choices that states have to implement the federal CZMA. And in doing that, part of that networking was including these laws. The state specifically said that they weren't going to create any new regulations when implementing the CZMA, but instead they were going to use existing laws, and the general and community plans are a network of those laws. And also, while it is true that in 1978, when the Secretary of Commerce approved the first coastal zone management program, that the community plan from 1996 was not included in it, it should be noted that in 1990, the amendment to the law that required the community plan consistency determination, the general plan consistency determination, was included in the 1990 approval, which this court took judicial notice of, both of those approvals. I also want to note that since the 90s, federal law has done away with the requirement that the secretary approve program amendments in the manner that they had been done. We cited that in the supplemental brief. The regulation is 15 CFR 923.80B. And now NOAA, it just is informed through a much simpler process that that Ms. Lim had indicated occurs basically on an annual basis, that the Office of Planning submits updates. But it should be noted that exemptions from 205A have never been brought to the attention of NOAA, while exemptions for apparently at least a harbor, as Ms. Lim represents, has been brought to the attention of the federal government. So I think that that just underscores the point that that nobody has ever intended 201H38 actions to exempt something from 205A compliance.
You would say, is that we get there by how we define relating to the environment, or how do we get to that result in your view?
Well, definitely 205A is a law relating to environmental quality. It also is it is an environmental regulation. It uses the general and community plans, to further that regulation. And I think to the extent that 201H38 should not be read to allow an exemption for 205A because it wasn't intended. The word planning was added in 1984, but it should also be noted that in 1986, the law was amended to include 205, which is the state land use law. But if you read the statute, it says all of the laws related to planning, land use, development, et cetera. It's not clear if you just read it and assume, well, that must mean everything and everything, that why would the legislature need to amend 201H, well, the predecessor to 201H38, why would they need to amend it to include the Land Use Commission when the Land Use Commission implements a land use law? And I think that the long legislative history demonstrates that the purpose of 201H38 was to create this separate zoning, building, construction, subdivision standards for a particular project, but it was in no way intended to be this catch-all, that anything that relates in any way to the regulation of land use for whatever purpose is automatically exempted. Our position is that is the correct interpretation. And separate from the federal issue, we do believe that there's adequate and independent state grounds to reach that same conclusion, namely that every agency has an obligation to protect the public trust and protect every individual's right to a clean and healthful environment. And if 205A were to be interpreted in a way where it could be exempted without a clear statutory intention to do so, the county is basically left with no standards with which to fulfill its trust duties.
Very well. Justice Wilson has a question. Oh, Justice Wilson, you got to unmute. Sorry.
Thank you, CJ. Mr. Collins, if I understand you correctly, your point is that 201H38 doesn't apply to the Coastal Zone Management Act, and that's because the Coastal Zone Management Act is an environmental law. It doesn't necessarily include planning and development within the meaning of 201H38. Okay. So if that is the case, then let me ask you, are you then conceding that 201H38 does contemplate a change of the community plan or the general plan through the resolution process represented in Resolution 14?
Outside of the special management area, Your Honor. And one of the basis for that is if you look at the definition of eligible developer in 201H-32, it says that the second requirement says two, to have submitted plans for a housing project adequately meeting the objectives of this chapter, the maintenance of aesthetic values in the locale of the project, and the requirements of all applicable environmental statutes and rules. So in order for in order for 201H-38 to even apply, there needs to be an eligible developer. And in order to be an eligible developer, the corporation has to determine that the plans adequately meet the requirements of all applicable environmental statutes and rules.
And you're saying in this case, there would have to be an indication that it complied with the Cultural Zone Management Act.
That the Maui Planning Commission would have to make a consistency determination finding with respect to the general and community plan.
So the resolution process to provide an exemption to the community plan is available only outside the CZM, the Coastal Zone Management Area. Is that your view?
As the statute is currently written, yes.
Very well. Justice Nakayama has a question.
Thank you, CJ. Mr. Collins, how do you respond to Ms. Lim's argument that we should read the preparatory part of 201H38, that only applies to if it's statutes relating to planning, pardon me, but only apply it to Part C, which is specifically talking about development. Excuse me. So therefore, they're narrowing the scope so that the statute doesn't, then 205 doesn't apply, isn't an environmental statute.
Our position is that 205A is a law related to environmental, that is a law related to environmental quality. It regulates the environment. It also happens to, in some instances, because it's part of this network of law, it also happens to be a land use and planning statute. It's really the legislature who's made the determination that consistency with the general plan, which includes the community plan, is a requirement in order to have a development within the SMA. And so there's nothing in 201H that indicates that the legislature had intended for developments in the SMA to not have to comply with the requirements of the SMA law. I'm not sure if I answered your question correctly, and if I didn't, I'm sorry.
Mr. Collins, can I ask you with regard to the standing and due process issues, from the association's point of view, what should happen on remand? In other words, based on the ICA's decision, what next for this project, and what would happen? Would we go back to the beginning of the SMA process, or how would that take place?
Your Honor, our position is that the permit is void because it did not comply with the procedural requirements, and it deprived us of our right to due process. It would go back to the beginning, but of course, at this point, the project has been substantially built. And so unfortunately, and I think that this was contemplated or discussed somewhat in Re Miko about, you know, what happens in these situations where basically life moves forward and just, you know, decisions are made. And so I think unfortunately the result is that if this goes back on remand, that PPKA and the individual interveners, some of the choices that would have been available had they been granted intervention originally are probably now foreclosed. But that doesn't mean that the Planning Commission can't go through its standards and find a suitable way of accommodating everybody's interests. They'll just have to be something that's a little bit out of the ordinary because of some of the choices now have been foreclosed by the passage of time in the building of the project.
Very well. Justice Edens has a question. Justice Edens.
Mr. Collins, Mr. Colby, and to a certain extent Ms. Lim, pointed out that 205A26-2C seems to relate more to environmental provisions. And the language does suggest that it seems to be more about planning and zoning than the environment. So what do you make of the argument that even if a project can be, or even if a project cannot be exempted from the CZMA's environmental protections, that if we want to give effect to the legislative intent behind 201H38, we need to recognize that it does indeed exempt qualified projects from the consistency findings of 205A26-2C?
Well, our position is that 201H38 shouldn't be read so broadly as to cast that wide of a net, that the long legislative history of the statute from 1976 until present demonstrates that the legislature has never intended the exemption to apply to the CZMA and not to certain parts of it and not other parts of it, because 205A is a law related to the environment and protecting natural resources. And if you look at 201, I don't mean to look back at this again, but if you look at 201H-32, plans for housing projects, to be an eligible developer, you have to comply with the requirements of all applicable environmental statutes and rules. And so that's a limitation on it. And I think the question of, well, should the general plan or should the community plan be part of the network of laws under the CZMA, that's not up to the Maui Planning Commission, and it's certainly not up to the Maui County Council. That's something that, if that is intended, the legislature needs to make that clear. And I think, in addition, the CZM program itself has never viewed 201H-38 as allowing an exemption from this part, because they've never notified anybody of that. Even under the more liberal ways of notifying the federal government of changes to the CZM program, the Office of Planning has never done that.
Very well, please continue.
I wanted to also note that with respect to HRS 171-134, it does appear that the language that was adopted in 1988 I don't have it here. I think it's Act 1316 or 361, does pretty closely pattern the language that appeared in the predecessor to this statute that existed in 1986. So we do think that to the extent that 171-135 is a statute that basically has taken the language from 201H38 or its predecessor under 359G 4.1, that they should be read together. I do know, and I'm sorry that I haven't researched this exhaustively, but my understanding was that the focus of the bill that passed was primarily related to industrial park lessees, I think most of the focus was Sand Island, and it wasn't readily apparent from the legislative history that there had been any focus on why did they pick 358G-4.1, but I haven't exhaustively researched it, so it is possible that I may have missed a committee report. One note of with respect to 201H38 relates to what was Act 15 of the session laws of 1988. That created a five-year moratorium on the counties being involved in what was at the time 201E, and all decision-making was transferred to the HFDC. However, a specific section in the law itself said that the state, in basically taking over all this decision-making, still had to comply with HRS 343 and HRS 205A, that during this five-year special period, that they still had to comply with that. And it just, from, you know, each change that has been made, there seems to be a clear pattern that the legislature has interpreted this law not very liberally, but narrowly. It's an exemption from general laws, and that is never intended to exempt 205A, even though the network of laws included in the 70s included the county general plan. It's never indicated that 205A should be excluded. With respect to standing, we believe that the ICA made the correct determination. The PPKAA and the individual interveners all operated pro se. We believe that even under the Hawaii Rules of Civil Procedure, what was presented in the petition would be sufficient to establish these interests. The what was suggested in the briefing, that there needed to be some level of formality, or it had to be in the first person active voice with respect to stating what the interests were of these individuals, is something that's not supported by our case law. And
the argument that the testimony at the public hearing is not something that could be relied on, at least in the circumstances in this case. Several association members spoke, not in a contested case hearing, obviously, but in a public hearing format. Is that something that could be relied on properly in determining standing?
Yes, it could be. And, you know, the only limitations, if this were a contested case, the only limitations would be that all of the evidence admitted must be relevant, material, and not unduly repetitious. And so everything that they said would be permitted. The developer had the opportunity to make an open-ended presentation before the commission, before they made a final decision. At no time did they indicate that they wanted to present rebuttal evidence to anything that they said. And, in their presentation, I think they made the points they wanted to make, and they had a full opportunity to do that. And furthermore, to not allow the commission to be able to consider public testimony would basically eviscerate the whole purpose of having Chapter 92 and requiring the Planning Commission to accept oral testimony, because then the result would be, well, people can testify, but you can't consider it. What's the point of what's the purpose of allowing the public to testify if then the Planning Commission is not entitled to consider it, or is not required to be aware of it? And in this instance, they severely restricted the ability of the interveners to do very much. It was a outright denial, and it was consistent with a practice that has developed with the Planning Commission, which is that they've been denying all petitions to intervene using the same overly restrictive interpretation of their rules to deny everybody the ability to participate. And I think, you know, in the bigger picture, the problem here is that had the Planning Commission allowed this group and individuals to intervene and to participate in a contested case proceeding, they would have had their issues resolved. The Planning Commission would have heard what the issues were, possibly made modifications, possibly not, and that would have been over. And this thing would have been constructed with whatever modifications the Planning Commission felt were appropriate, and, you know, everybody would have lived with it. But instead, what occurred was the Planning Commission outright refused to allow somebody that had a clear property interest in this permit from in any way participating, and refusing to hear anything that was being said, and that, you know, they know better, or that's their job, and don't tell us what to do. And now we're here today. And that's, I think, one of the unfortunate things about overly restrictive views of standing is that what could be resolved in a relatively simple manner is not.
Justice Wilson has a question.
Thank you, CJ. Mr. Collins, I was expecting that the consistency analysis that you are providing is one that would agree that if there had been an amendment to the community plan, an amendment that was consistent with the purposes of 201H38, that would have satisfied the consistency requirement of 205. Is that your analysis?
That if the Planning Commission had made a finding of consistency?
No, I'm assuming that there would have been an application on the part of the developer to change the community plan to make it clear that it anticipates this kind of affordable housing. In that case, would you agree that that would meet the consistency requirement?
It would. And one point that I apologize I didn't make earlier, where we disagree with the county's interpretation of the council's power. Under the Maui County Charter, the council does not have sole authority to create community plan amendments. It must go first to the Maui Planning Commission. There's actually a whole process that results in the passage of an ordinance, but it's not solely the Maui County Council's role, and they don't do it by issuing a resolution, which is just a one, for that resolution is a one-time thing. So if there had been a community plan amendment that address the issues. I mean, one of the issues with the community plan is that it called for a 6-acre park, and the planning department's finding was that it was consistent to the extent that there was a 1.5-acre park. But of course, left unsaid was that it was inconsistent as to the 4.5-acre park. If there was a community plan amendment that addressed this issue and that finding could be made, then there would be no issue with respect to 205A26-2C.
Justice Edens has a question.
Yeah, Ms. Collins, before you leave us, I just wanted to try to understand some of the points you made in both your opening brief and the response to the cert. In the opening brief that was filed, you mentioned that the county council did not and could not, by resolution, exempt developers from the CZMA requirements to which the commission was obligated to conform. And then in the response to the cert petition, you wrote that the Maui County Council might have had the authority to exempt the developer's project from Chapter 2, 205A, but did not do so in this particular case. So I'm just wondering, you know, what is really the basis for you now apparently conceding that the council might have had the authority to exempt the development project from Chapter 205?
Yes, Your Honor. That phrasing is very clumsy and inartful. I was trying to draw attention to the fact that the council didn't exempt it. And so it's not even an issue because the council did not take action to exempt the project from 205. Unfortunately, I didn't do it in a very artful manner. I put it in an unusual conditional tense that can be read to seem that I was suggesting that the county council could do that. The county council can't do that. And I apologize for the inartfulness.
Collins, what exactly does the Planning Commission seem to expect of someone who's doesn't have an ownership interest in the property in order to establish standing?
Well, as the record reflects, the Maui Planning Commission, through this case at least, basically doesn't allow anybody to have standing, because their position is that if you can raise any interest that is responsive or covered under the CZMA, then that means that your interest is no different than the general public, and it's the Planning Commission's job to determine any interests that relate to the CZMA. And I think that that's one of the significant problems in this case, and what the record reflects of previous cases, some that had been decided by the ICA.
Even for adjoining landowners or landowners who live in the immediate area and have or can point to specific impacts on their use and enjoyment of their land or of that area?
The Wahikuli Community Neighborhood Association, which was one of the cases that was cited as being denied, they shared a property boundary with the proposed project. I think Derry Road Partners, there was a little bit of distance. But yes, the Planning Commission has interpreted its own rules to deny anybody the ability to intervene. I do want to note that in the last few years, there's obviously been a change in personnel, that they have granted a few interventions. But up until the time of this case, they had not granted interventions unless a court had intervened for over a decade.
Justice McKenna.
Thank you. Mr. Collins, I'm just curious, did you raise 205A-6 at all with respect to standing, and whether is that relevant to standing? That statute that says that any person may commence a civil action, I see. So it's actually a civil action. I'm sorry. I withdraw my question. Thank you.
Mr. Collins, I guess we've gone over a bit. Any final words for the court before we turn back to Ms. Lim?
Your Honor, we would ask the court to affirm the decision of the Intermediate Court of Appeals, and to the extent that the court is inclined to further address the issue of 201H-30A and 205A-26-2C, that this court protect the laws related to environmental quality that the legislature has passed and has the law that is implemented with respect to this federal program, and to find that that there is no legislative intent to allow there to be an exemption under 201H-38 to Chapter 205A. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Mr. Collins. Ms. Lim, your rebuttal. We've exceeded time, but you know, again, quite a bit of material has come out, and including on standing. So, let's start by aiming for about 5 minutes, but we'll see if that's enough. Okay.
Thank you, Chief Justice. I'll try to be quick. In rebuttal, I just have to say, as I said earlier, Act 188, which was enacted in 1977, that is what was part of the Coastal Zone Management Program that got approved by the federal government. All subsequent approvals were routine project implementation. There was one approval, it was in 1978, after the publication of a final environmental assessment for the entire Coastal Zone Management Program. And it's something that is important, I think, for the court to know, is I already said earlier that the exemption powers under 359G had been in existence since 1970. So they were, you know, almost a decade old before the Coastal Zone Management Program got approved. But it's important for the court to recognize that from the beginning, and I believe Mr. Collins said something otherwise, but from the beginning, 359G and its progeny have always had special treatment for the Land Use Commission. There's always been a special carve-out. The Land Use Commission approvals were never going to be something that could be approved by the county councils under the 45-day approval process. So while the legislature granted this tremendous exemption power, it said, not so fast with respect to Chapter 205. Now, they never did that with respect to Chapter 205A. And for that five-year period that Mr. Collins raised when Act 15 was in place, now that took place in 1988 to 1993, if I remember, or thereabouts. For those 5 years, the councils were told, hands off, you will have no say whatsoever in approving these affordable housing projects. And possibly as a concession to give assurance to the counties, the legislature said, but for this 5-year period, we're not going to allow any exemptions from Chapter 343 or Chapter 205A. So if that was the law that then it got repealed, I can't think of the right terminology, but it got repealed within 5 years. It was a 5-year moratorium with an automatic repeal. If that was a law in effect then, that shows the legislature was fully aware of Chapter 205A development permit processes, but they never said, hey, we better do that same carve out that we do for the Land Use Commission. We better do it for 205A. So just to reframe it, we do continue to assert that the County Council has the authority not to exempt from all of Chapter 205A, certainly not the coastal zone management objectives and policies, but we're talking about one thread within the development permit section of Chapter 205A that deals with zoning and general plans. And we all know that county councils have the authority to deal with zoning and general plans. So I'm sorry.
Has a question for you, Ms. Lim.
Thank you, Ms. Lim. I understand your position is that this specific statute can be exempted under 201H38, but in terms of, the legislature made it clear that the entirety of Chapter 205A is a law relating to environmental quality? And I say so because in the Alaloop case, the Chief Justice's opinion pointed out that HRS 607-25, the statute that was passed by the legislature to allow enforcement of laws relating to the environment, environmental quality, and I think it was like in 88 or so, or 9, it was pretty late that statute was passed, so that people would start enforcing laws relating to environmental quality. And that statute, and in the Alaloop case, the opinion referred to Chapter 205 and referred to the legislative history of that case. And the legislature expressed that, you know, this statute in 1986, I'm sorry, was being passed to allow enforcement by private parties of laws relating to environmental quality. And the legislature still says that various chapters, including 205 and 205A, are laws relating to environmental quality that can be enforced by anyone and for which attorney's fees can be granted. So it's difficult for me to understand how you believe that certain portions of these statutes that relate to environmental quality can be pulled out and exempted, even though the legislature still seems to say that people can enforce these laws and obtain attorney's fees.
Thank you for the question, Justice McKenna. I think it's an excellent question. Of course, Alaloop did identify 205 as a law related to environmental quality for just the reasons that you articulated. That specific section of HRS 607-25 allows people to pursue, not contested case hearings, allows people to pursue declaratory actions when developers are, when projects are going forward, when developers are going forward without having obtained a development permit. But SCD obtained the development permit. That's what the SMA permit is. So, I mean, to the extent that 607-25 is viewed as a law related to environmental quality, it comes into play when there's development happening without a development permit. So I don't think it's applicable in this particular situation. But, you know, you raised a question, continuing with the points on environmental quality, you raised a question in some of the, with your earlier attorneys, asking about whether Chapter 205A is a law related to environmental quality for the purposes of standing, I believe. And for that, I'd like to address it if I could now, because I have a few answers to that. And one of them comes out of the PASH 2 case and was recited again in Citizens. And the other comes out of the Sandy Beach case. I mean, when it comes to standing specifically, the Citizens case relying on PASH recognized that you must comply in order to be granted standing in an SMA contested case hearing process, you must satisfy the three-part injury and in fact test. Whereas for declaratory purposes, that is not required. And you all just confirmed that in the recent Tax Foundation case. And in fact, and this is sort of a little bit hidden in the citizen's case, but yes, those same plaintiffs who the court had said, you've got standing for declaratory purposes. You live nearby, you're alleging concerns about quality of life. Those same plaintiffs before the Hawaii Planning Commission had been determined not to have standing for SMA purposes. And that ruling was upheld by the circuit court on the Big Island, and that was upheld by the Hawaii Supreme Court. So I think from the perspective of what are the boxes you have to check, the actual concerns and needs that you must have in order to have standing in a contested case hearing for an SMA permit. So we're talking about a very specific, narrow road. I think that Citizens gives us pretty good direction there, even though they had environmental concerns, it certainly wasn't enough to give them standing. And as you all well know, the Sandy Beach case is well on point. And you've cited to that case recently in the MECO decision and in the HELCO decision. It's still good law. And those plaintiffs were seeking the ability to pursue action against an SMA permit. And the court, they raised, and I have to look at my notes, but the exact words were they were concerned about development on coastal views, property values, loss of open space, traffic, flooding, sewage, extremely similar to the concerns that were raised in this case. And this court said, those are aesthetic and environmental interests, but that is enough, not enough to give you a property interest, and therefore not enough to give you a due process right to require additional due process procedures in the event of a special management area permit proceeding.
Ms. Lim, thank you for that insight into our standing cases. I wanted to then get your thoughts about the Maui Electric case. That was a case that didn't involve the coastal zone management permitting process, but nonetheless, it was a case where standing was found for the community that was being affected by the emissions from the power plant. And how would you distinguish that?
Okay. Thank you for that, Justice Wilson. The MECO case is 180 degrees different from the case that we have before us. And that's not even, I would answer that even if I wasn't talking about an affordable housing project. Okay. Starting with one. This project, as I've already said, had gone through a 2.5-year public vetting process, HRS Chapter 343 assessment, numerous public hearings, okay, related to, before the Maui Planning Commission related to that environmental assessment, numerous public hearings before the Maui County Council, then before the Maui Urban Design Review Board, and then back to the Maui Planning Commission to request approval for an SMA. Contrast that with MECO. My understanding is there was no range of public hearings. It was somewhat of a locked box star chamber decision. So that would be one difference. I think another very important difference is that in MECO, the defendant or the developer had been cited for over $1 million in fines for over 400 Clean Air Act violations in just the recent past alone. And those plaintiffs said, court, hey, we're really concerned about the health risks from these emissions. And the PUC is supposed to consider that anyway. It's right in statute. And the PUC didn't. And this court, I understood, okay, so, said for reasons of justice. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Thank you, then. As I understand it, it was significant that there were other opportunities for the proposed interveners in this case that they didn't participate in. They waited a long time until the matter came before the Planning Commission for purposes of this amendment. And in addition to that, the injuries that were suffered by the purported interveners in this case were more tenuous and not as direct. Is that what you're suggesting?
It is, but I would take it a little bit further than that, Justice, in that we don't believe that the association articulated any concrete interests that caused a genuine concern arising from this project. Again, the MECO case, we're talking about dangerous health risks. here we're talking about a housing project on urban land on Front Street in Lahaina. We are not saying that there would never be a situation where an organization or a neighbor wouldn't be able to get standing in before the Maui Planning Commission for a special management area. Of course, there are many, but this particular association, despite plenty of opportunities to do so, just didn't give us, didn't provide any concrete traceable injuries that they believed were going to occur should this project move forward. Instead, they just recited a lot of requirements under 205A.
Is that discounting the oral testimony of the individuals at the hearing?
And you're talking about the public testimony, Chief Justice?
Yes, public testimony.
I'm not discounting that for the purposes of my response. Even going through that testimony during the public hearing portion, you'll be hard-pressed to find specific, concrete, traceable injuries that had not already been addressed in the final environmental assessment and within the package that was before the Maui Planning Commission. There were many allegations made about concerns, and it's perfectly fine to have concerns, but those concerns had been refuted by the information that was in the final environmental assessment. So to articulate a concern that had already been addressed and answered, 9 months earlier, doesn't make it a concrete concern.
Very well. At this point, any other closing thoughts as we wrap up today?
Thank you, sir. We urge the court to recognize that this was an important affordable housing project. We were very grateful to get the SMA permit. This developer didn't cut one corner. Every permit that was required was obtained. Every regulation that had to be followed was followed. We would say that this association could not be found to have a property interest. And in that respect, and in all other respects, we believe the ICA got it wrong. But if this court were to disagree with us and uphold the ICA's decision with respect to a property interest, we urge the court to take notice of the extensive public process that took place here and the governmental interest in allowing affordable projects to go forward after 2.5 years of processing. And for that reason, to hold that a sufficient process was given. And with that, I'll rest.
What would your response be to, Mr. Collins suggest, I asked about what happens on remand if we agree with the ICA. Is there anything you wish to add from the developer's perspective as to what a remand would look like or should look like if we did agree with the ICA on issues of standing and due process?
Well, as a foundational...
Or anything, I realize you believe the ICA was wrong and you're asking us to find that there was no standing or due process interest. But if we were to affirm the ICA, is there anything that you want to bring to our attention about what that remand should look like?
If I'm understanding the question, and forgive me if I'm not, but specific instruction with respect to the 201H question and perhaps specific instruction with respect to the characterization of standing and what is and isn't required, rather than just the blanket ruling that the ICA came out with, which seemed to disregard all of the contrary information and disregard the evidence in the record and just said, well, they made the allegations, they must have standing. We would hope that this court would help the Maui Planning Commission by narrowing down the specific items that should be considered for that decision.
In order to determine standing or in order to merit. So your view is that the appropriate disposition is to return to the Planning Commission to reassess the issue of standing?
No, sir. Our position is that the SMA permit was validly issued. Our position is that this group did not have standing. They absolutely didn't establish it. And
of course,
they certainly don't have a property interest.
If you would. My question is, if we disagree with you on that, what do you think the remand should look like? And I believe I just heard you say we should remand it for the Planning Commission to make a standing determination in light of our ruling. Was that correct? Did I understand?
Yes. Yes. I'm sorry if I misunderstood, but yes.
Okay. Very well. Anything further for the court at this time, Ms. Lim?
No, thank you very much.
Okay. Very well. Thank you. And thank you to all of our attorneys for your argument today. The court will take this matter under advisement.
Ua ho'o ku'u ia mai ne kea aha ho'o kolo kolo ki'e ki'e hano hano o ka moko aina o Hawaii. This Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii is now adjourned.